Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, March 4th. The votes are still being counted in California, but we can say that the West is a relative stronghold for Bernie Sanders, as the results from 14 Super Tuesday states are getting digested on this day after. He likely won California, did win Colorado and Utah, failed to win Texas, but came within 4 points of Biden there. If this is becoming a two-person race, now that Michael Bloomberg has dropped out and we'll see what Elizabeth Warren does, it is a somewhat regional two-person race. The total delegate count as of a short time ago was Biden 390, Sanders 330. There is still a long way to go. It takes 1,991 delegates to win the nomination. With us now, Rolling Stone politics correspondents Jamil Smith in L.A. and Tessa Stewart in New York. Tessa and Jamil, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jamil, before we get to the results, remind everyone how much of a behemoth California was in terms of delegates.
Oh, my gosh. It's incredible. I mean, it's easily the biggest prize in the in the primary contest. In terms of numbers, I can't recall the exact number at the moment, but it's certainly the biggest prize of the night, more than any other state combined.
I'm cheating. I have it in front of me on a cheat sheet. It's 415 delegates. So
you knew all this time.
Out of 1,300 something that were at stake last night, wow.
Yes. And so, the key for candidates last night is to get over the 15% threshold in the state. So if you get over that 15% threshold, that's how you get delegates. So if, even Elizabeth Warren were to get over that 15% threshold, she would get a significant number of delegates out of the state. So that is, that's the prize in California. Now, of course, here in California, you can mail your ballots in. You saw long lines at polling places last night, but a lot of us put our ballots in the mail. And those ballots can be counted up to 3 days after Election Day. So we're going to, have to wait a little bit longer to see exactly how many delegates are going to be apportioned.
As of a little while ago, it was Sanders with 34% of the vote that's been counted so far, Biden with 25%, Bloomberg, who's now dropped out, but he was not viable, meaning less than 15%, as you just described it, which would get him no delegates. He had 14% just under it as of a little while ago, and Warren even lower with 12%. I guess we might speculate that the total Biden result might be a little lower if so many people decided at the last minute in the last 3 days since South Carolina, and there was 2 weeks of early voting in California. There's probably more of a Biden vote in the people who voted yesterday than the people who voted early. Would that be a reasonable assumption?
Go ahead, Tessa.
I know that in California, that dynamic was true in most other states, but in California, you saw people that decided the day of, 42% going with Bernie Sanders versus 27% for Joe Biden. And in the last few days, 24% going for Bernie Sanders, 47% going for Joe Biden.
So Tessa, what makes Bernie Sanders' strength in California? And for that matter, in Texas, the other big state that we should talk about.
Yeah, I mean, he is very strong with Latino voters in California. He won them by double the margin that Joe Biden has based on the returns we've seen so far. And he's also really strong, as he's strong everywhere with young voters in California.
And I wonder if you've seen a demographic breakdown out there in L.A., Jamil. I mean, it could be shaping up that one of the dynamics in this race is that Joe Biden is the favorite of African-American voters. Bernie Sanders is the favorite of Latinx voters.
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think, we can't ignore the fact that over these last 4 years, the Sanders folks, whether it be the campaign folks or our revolution folks, have spent these last years building the relationships in these communities, whether it be Latinx communities, Chicano communities, you know, that perhaps that they did not have in 2016. They've really emboldened themselves. So these relationships are now paying off. And I think it's to their credit that, you know, that they've invested themselves in these communities. Now, that said, we've not seen them make the similar investment in African-American communities. And we've seen, essentially, Biden's long investment, you know, both in during his time with the Obama administration and during his previous Senate career. We've seen his trust with those communities in his, name ID certainly pay off. The Clyburn endorsement in South Carolina helped. But I think also both campaigns are really going to have to show both African-American and Hispanic and Latino communities what they have in terms of policy for those communities. It's not simply going to be a name ID or, celebrity contest. It's going to have to be about policy going forward because, you know, really they're going to be just pretty much the two of them on the debate stage going forward. It's going to be a lot to talk about.
Let me play just 15 seconds of South Carolina Congressman Jim Clyburn's endorsement of Joe Biden from last week. So many people are seeing this as a pivotal moment for the Biden campaign. Here's a line that almost everybody who follows politics has probably heard since.
I know Joe. We know Joe. But most importantly, Joe knows us.
Tessa, how important do you think that Clyburn endorsement really was?
Hugely important. You saw, although there, one thing that's interesting is that you did see the polls for Joe Biden getting better after Nevada before Jim Clyburn endorsed him. But definitely, I think half of people in exit polls, half of the voters in South Carolina in exit polls said that Jim Clyburn's endorsement was very important to them. You saw that with that win in South Carolina, Pete Buttigieg drops out, Amy Klobuchar drops out, he gets Beto O'Rourke's endorsement. So basically all of the dominoes start falling into place for Joe Biden right after South Carolina.
Tessa, I saw your article just before the voting started. Was four big questions for Super Tuesday. The first one, was South Carolina an outlier, and was Nevada? Mm-hmm. Two very different states, mm-hmm. because Biden won South Carolina so big, but Bernie Sanders did win Nevada very big just in the week before. So mm-hmm. do you conclude that either of them was an outlier?
No, neither of them were outliers. They were both pretty much in line with what we saw last night. Sanders has done really well in Texas with Latino voters. I mean, Biden ultimately won the whole state, but you're still seeing Sanders' strength with the Latino community in Texas and in California, and the same dynamics are replicating themselves across the southern states for Joe Biden. I think the surprise results for Biden last night were in Minnesota and Massachusetts, where he wasn't expected to win at all. He wasn't.
And that was your second question mm-hmm. of the four. Who will Minnesotans back?
Yeah, Minnesota is really interesting because Bernie won in 2016. He held a rally there the night before. He was looking pretty good in polls, kind of neck and neck with Amy Klobuchar running up to yesterday's election. And Joe Biden really wasn't in the polls. And there was a sense that Michael Bloomberg could be competitive there. He spent $10 million there. And Joe Biden kind of comes from behind. And it's another one of those places where you see late deciders breaking for Joe Biden. I think 55% of voters who decided the day of or in the last couple of days before the election went for Joe Biden, and he ended up winning pretty big there.
It also means a lot of people follow the advice of their favorite daughter, quote unquote, Senator Amy Klobuchar, who dropped out and endorsed Biden the night before the vote.
Yeah, huge, a huge feather in Amy Klobuchar's cap for sure.
From a Biden point of view.
Yeah.
One of the things favoring Sanders and a knock on Biden is that Sanders is clearly running four things, not just against things, like those things or not, Medicare for all, free public college, Green New Deal, etc. Last night in Biden's victory speech, I thought he took a shot at convincing people that he is running for things too. He's really loud in this stretch with the big crowd there who he was addressing, very excited with all his victories. But here's 30 seconds of that.
Our agenda is bold, it's progressive, it's a vision where healthcare is affordable and available to everybody in America. Where we bring drug prices down under control with no more surprise billing. Access to hospitals in rural areas as well as urban areas. Access to care. A bold vision where we invest billions of dollars to find, and I promise you, cures for cancer, Alzheimer's, and diabetes.
And he went on from there. That's actually a very long stretch of the speech to refer to the Paris Climate Accord, which he would get back into, that the quality of education doesn't depend on your zip code, free community college, and other things. So, Jamil, I don't know. I heard that as a direct response to this idea that Bernie is running for something. He's just running to stop Trump.
I mean, certainly promising cures for cancer and Alzheimer's certainly switches the narrative from the "no, we can't" campaign.
I think he was technically, as I read the, you know, I heard that the same way at first, and I went back and looked at the transcript, and I think what he was really promising was to invest billions of dollars to look for cures for cancer and Alzheimer's and diabetes, but it certainly sounded like he was promising the cures.
I mean, it's right around the corner, folks. But at the same time, I think, you know, at the heart of it, though, if people really look at the details of the Biden agenda, what he has been promising all along is essentially to put America into a DeLorean and take us back to 2008 when, you know, we elected Obama and Joe Biden and everything was rosier and everything was fine. And we were going on the verge of implementing Obamacare, and Obamacare was regarded as the shining healthcare achievement that, you know, it was painted as. And since we have since found holes in Obamacare, we've understood that there can be improvements made in it. And what we need to do is work on improving it rather than deifying it. And I think that's the danger in the Biden messaging here. And I think that, you know, I think one thing I worry about going forward with Joe Biden is essentially, you know, arguing a little bit too hard for a return to the past and painting a little bit more, you know, in, you know, this nostalgia as innovation.
Susan in Hartsdale, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Well, I'm a Biden supporter because I think he's the only candidate that's going to address the problem of income inequality. But my worry is that now, with Bloomberg supporting Biden and paying for ads for Biden, that's it for Bernie. I mean, it doesn't look good, regardless of policy positions or anything else.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Tessa, we saw that Bloomberg's $500 million didn't buy him hardly anything. And in fact, one of the, you know, big stories that's the opposite of that is that Biden had no organization in places like Minnesota. He had nobody on the ground. He had no ads on television, and yet he won. So money can't buy you love.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Bloomberg, $500 million to win American Samoa. But another way that you could look at it is Elizabeth Warren, who had a super PAC get in the last 2 weeks, spent $14.8 million in a lot of states, and she failed to get over viability in most of the Super Tuesday states. So I think one of the big messages of the primary so far is that money is not buying this election.
And I want to linger on that for one more question, Jamil, because though, you know, the easy headline is Bloomberg spent all this money and it didn't buy him anything, the other side of that is the amazing Biden story, where he was kind of running out of money. He wasn't on TV in a lot of the states that he won. He didn't have a ground game. He didn't have an organization to get out the vote in a lot of states that he won. And look how he ran up the delegate total.
there's two things. I think one is that you cannot discount the value of free media. I think once the consolidation happened, he was on TV all of the time. You had Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar and Beto basically on television all weekend. And so it was like free advertising for him. And so I don't know how, in all fairness, any candidate could have competed with that. And secondly, I think that, we have to look forward to a campaign, should he be the nominee, of really nasty attacks from the Republican side. I mean, already this morning, we have Lindsey Graham talking about, baseless charges of Ukrainian this and that, whispering around Joe Biden. I mean, any kind of hint of political viability for Joe Biden, and we've seen the Republicans start to encroach upon this baseless scandal around Burisma and all this stuff. So we're going to see this stuff all during the campaign, and so no matter how much money Bloomberg puts into the campaign, we're going to have to see them combat what's coming from the Republican side.
Jamal in Nassau County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jamal.
Hi, Brian. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure.
You guys just started to talk about the Elizabeth Warren campaign a little bit. I have been a big supporter of Elizabeth Warren, even back from 2016. I thought she was the best candidate at that point. I thought she was the best candidate in this election, and she still is. But it's been frustrating and kind of difficult to understand how come she's not getting the type of traction that I thought she deserved. When I'm, everything mm-hmm. I'm reading, everything I'm seeing online, all the TV coverage that I watched, broadly praised her debate performances, broadly praised her platforms, her plans, and her work. And the general sense that I got from a lot of the pundits is that she's the best candidate, but she really struggled to get traction at the polls, and she really struggled to get, especially after, I feel like New Hampshire, she struggled to get traction even on mass media. Like she was, mm-hmm. After New Hampshire, really pivoted to Bernie versus Biden.
Let me jump in just because we're going to run out of time for the show. But Jamal, thank you, and please call us again. And we haven't talked about Warren very much in this segment. We spent most of the first half hour of the show earlier on what happened to the Warren campaign. But Tessa, what's your take?
I think, to be very simplistic about it, I think that people are nervous about putting a brainy woman against Trump again. I think that the general sense you get is that there's a lot of reticence, and the number one issue for people, and you saw this in exit polls in every primary so far, is that people want someone who can beat Trump, and they differ on their interpretations of who is best to beat Trump. But there seems to be a consensus that people don't think Elizabeth Warren is the person.
Everybody's a pundit, and that worked to her disadvantage. Yeah. Tessa, even though, as Jamal put it very well, the pundit class, I think the professional politicians and a lot of media people thought from the very start that, and I'll add one more name in here, I think a lot of people thought this is going to be Elizabeth Warren's or Kamala Harris's to lose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that, she was doing really well up until passed Joe Biden in the national poll average. And as soon as she started getting scrutiny, and you've seen this with every front runner, and you're going to see it again with Joe Biden now that he's the front runner again, there's going to be a lot of scrutiny on him and a lot of people wringing their hands wondering if he can actually beat Trump.
Jamil, can I get a last thought from you in our last minute about something you tweeted this morning? It was about long lines at some of the polling places. And
yes.
I wonder your take on the implications for November.
Yes, I think more than anything, I think the Democratic Party really has to come up with a plan to deal with the long lines that we saw, not just here in California, but also that we're probably going to see in states like Ohio and Michigan and in various other states that, we're going to see coming forth in the primary. I think, look at a state like Texas. After 2013, Shelby County versus Holder, the Voting Rights Act is neutered. And you see that state, implement various, voting restrictions. And, you have a litany of voting locations that are just randomly closed. That's not a coincidence.
Voter suppression targeted on African Americans and students, by and large, is what some of the reporting that you cited and that others that I've seen have cited, looking at some of what happened on Super Tuesday, definitely something to watch and address going forward. Tessa Stewart in New York, Jamil Smith in California, Rolling Stone politics correspondents, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And listeners, we want to invite you in on the conversation too. If you've got a question about a national news item, whether it's something you want to know about the election or the Trump administration or anything else you think might fall under the national politics umbrella, give us a call and leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and your question. We'll collect those and keep them in our pocket for when I'm speaking with someone who can give you a good answer. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255. 844-745-TALK. See you tomorrow.